Welcome and thank you for tuning in on Yachting International Radio today. My name is Evelianne Veldkamp and you're listening to Maritime Unity. Today, we will talk with Margarita Amon on why growth happens outside of your comfort zone. Thank you very much for joining today, Margarita.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
Yeah. And it was so nice to speak with you on the last episode on all these nice things. But before we start, can you please quickly introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Margarita Amon. I'm working 18 years now in the yachting industry, 28 years in hospitality overall, growing from shoreside hospitality to the luxury segment has taught me a lot. And I've added some additional learning on that is outside of the hospitality management sphere and more into communication and cultural interactions, which I think is going to be one of the topics here today.
Yeah, and you're right. Yes. So the topic or the title for today's episode is why growth happens outside of your comfort zone. And before we dive a little bit deeper into this subject, I think we can just start with mentioning that the maritime sector, so you work in the yachting sector, but I come from the merchant marine sector. But in my experience, and I'm very curious to what your experiences are, you come across so much diversity in our sector. You have a lot of cultures, a lot of countries, a lot of things you come across that don't normally come across, people you speak with, habits from other people. Such a wild experience sometimes. And if it taught me one thing, it taught me how to listen and observe these things and be curious about what you exactly see and then learn from the different perspectives. So I'm also curious if you have the same experience in the yachting sector.
When I came into yachting, I felt that everything is a bit backwards because coming from land-based hospitality in the commercial sector, more things are focused on merit, on output, on results. And you were listened to when you would actually bring a concern or a critical point. The management would take it on and improve it because they know it would mean financial losses or gains to them. And then joining yachting, it felt like an upside down world because it didn't seem to be important to the majority of people that quality can be better than and such things. And lower positions generally are not being listened to or advised from people who are not in some sort of prestige position or hype, as in popular. Are being ignored. And I think it's becoming quite not just evident, but also detrimental to the yachting industry to the point where they now say, where's all the crew? We need to do more for retention and all of that. And they wonder why everybody, all the good people are running away. If you have listened to others before, and now I'm reiterating things that I've heard 18 years ago from other captains who are now build managers and similar, they have already come up with a whole bunch of solutions. And yet we see trade show after trade show, people repeating, why don't we have enough crew? Why do we have such bad retention? And that we should evolve and repeat. But yet the only thing that's happening is repeat.
Yeah, it seems like we're a little bit stuck into a fixed mindset, if you say that, right? And it's so, while we were talking, I was also wondering, because also it made me realize that my experience in the maritime sector was as an officer, first of all. I came from school being an officer, having a really good, very high quality education. What that was mostly paid for by my parents and also by the government. I had a good loan that I had to pay for then many years after, but it was arranged. I had a good social security system. And I was feeling safe also on board because the company that I was working for really had such a strong, psychologically safe, inclusive working environment built up in the 90s. And it really did a good job with this because I felt totally inclusive and able to speak up if there was something happening, because of course something sometimes happens, me being the only woman on board, for one, plenty, is a super green and young also. But then I was just able to speak about that without consequences and without it being getting too big also. When it was just minor things, I was just able to, oh, I really didn't like that. And then, oh no, I'm sorry. I didn't know that you experienced it like that and just not what I want. And now we can solve it. Yeah.
There were probably different ages of men on board as well. And all in context, of course. Yeah, you hear some sexist things or comments. And depending on who says it, you can gauge how old is this person, what kind of environment they probably grew up in. They usually then say slogans or things that they used to say and that they used to in their environment. And they didn't notice that, oh, you haven't updated, you have may updated your iPhone, but you haven't updated your belief system or your understanding of what is sexism, what is feminism, blah, 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 blah. So they same way. Like I hear sometimes still people saying, oh, that's so gay. Like this is so soft and so fun and so this and that. But they conflate it into, oh, that's gay. The word gay itself just means nothing else. This joyful thing. And then we got used from the LGBT community and ended up there. I'm not 100% safe on that history, but it was a normal word, a nice word. Then it was used against the LGBTQ community as a negative word. And now it's more of a, oh, that's gay, as in it's light, but it's still derogative. And some people still use it because it was the language of the 90s and they haven't updated since then. For them, I'm not angry with any of them. I just feel like, okay, that's their last update. It's quite far behind. How can we help you update? Or does that person even have the capability or the reach that the way he interacts does affect someone negatively? So it's important to measure how intense someone wants to react towards someone. They necessarily don't need a heavy reaction. It's the ones who repeatedly behave this way, really strongly take that stance of maybe toxic masculinity or the stance of toxic positivity that is repeated and throughout all the actions, maybe interaction with human beings, the colleagues, or on stage or trade shows. That's that where it requires maybe a stronger or a more intense reaction to counterweigh that. But yeah, I imagine as an only woman, young woman on board, that you've come across some comments that would consider outdated.
Yeah, and what I was really trying to point out in respect of getting outside of your comfort zone is that I also realized that I was pretty privileged already. Like I was in my comfort zone being amongst my own nationality with the same education, being an officer. And sometimes I can notice it because when I was working with, for example, the Indonesian ratings or the Filipino ratings, they look at you in a different way. But this not necessarily as a woman or something, but as somebody who is different than you and also treat you different. And that was also an eye-opener for me and also really learned also some capabilities of listening to each other. Because I think that's so interesting to talk about, because I think what we are trying to point out is that you have so much ability to grow if you are allowing yourself to, first of all, be aware of what you're doing. Because I think what you just pointed out was the total lack of awareness that some people have into their hurtful comments or into their convictions they have about themselves or about how the world should look or how someone else should look. That you cannot, you're eager to stay inside of your comfort zone. Also, it makes sense because it's comfortable.
And I can also some slack for it as well. We're all products of our environment. That doesn't mean that, so it's now your fault that you lived in this environment. The environment needs to be held responsible for it. Like systems need to be dismantled and held responsible for it, not necessarily only individuals. That doesn't mean that individuals should not be held responsible either. So it makes both parts. And so, yeah, I can cut slack to someone who maybe is in his 50s or 60s and him, it's not a stereotype. It's really what I have encountered all the time. So if a white middle-aged man says certain things about race and gender, I know where he's coming from. And I know I need to apply different tools up to a certain point, because you can't be tiptoeing around dictator like that, or a child that throws everything out of the pram, misbehaving and being damaging towards the cause or others. This kind of misbehavior, bad behavior, shouldn't be accepted. There's a limit to what can be acceptable and what not. Yelling at someone or using expletives that are not part of that, or making someone feel safe, unsafe, and threatening person is not part of that. And that's neat. That is something that we all also responsible for when you see it, to then call it up. And to your point of listening, I guess that's where fragility also kicks in. If your ears are too brittle, too fragile to hear the truth, how well can you actually listen? How well can you execute things? And then when you say it on board with the different cultures, Indonesian, Filipino, Indian chefs, or whatever else you have there, I see it as in, I've heard it also many times, and it's like the trickle-down economy. When the big companies make big money, small companies will also make money, which is a false narrative. It doesn't work. Just trickle-down feminism. It doesn't work. Like, you can see in any space where it is the topic of DEI, it's usually white women talking about it, rarely ever in an ethnic person. I haven't seen one. There's no trickle-down feminism, no trickle-down equality there either, just like there's no trickle-down economy. Yeah. And yeah, when it comes to that, I've noticed as well that they like to label different nationalities, just like they say about Filipinos. But they are more submissive, and they are more peaceful, and they don't want to be in leadership role. I don't know how they come to this conclusion. I guess it's the picture they want to press them in, because it's a whole country that works really well, and lots of individuals, Filipino individuals, are in, not just in art and in music, but they also contributed majorly to CGI and other technologies. So it's not that a whole nation by culture is submissive. It's not true. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a running government there either. So it's what fits into their narrative to keep them small and to keep them in the lower position. And you see this not just by them not listening to them. They also speak for them without having spoken with them before. And when they turn around to an ethnic person and say, have I ever treated you racistly? Or have you ever encountered anything? And they expect an honest answer. They fool only themselves by doing so, because the person across will never give you an honest answer, because you are not someone they can trust. So therefore, they will tell you whatever you want to hear, which is telling the white manager, no, you haven't. Everything's fine. They just tell you, yes, sir. Yes, master. Yes, sir. Whatever it is you want to hear, just leave me in peace, because the more I interact with you, the more danger is coming towards me. So they refrain from interacting. And that's why you hear them only saying, yes, ma'am and sir. And that's it. And try to get out of that threatening situation that they've been pushed into. Another place where you see as well that how they mute or delete ethnic voices is, I've started asking British captains or British or German, whoever is there, hey, what's the name of your chief officer? And how do you know each other? And what's the name of your chief stewardess when she's also Caucasian? They usually know the first name and the last name, and they also know their hobbies, and they've also spent time drinking together and all of that. But when it comes to, hey, what's the last name of Filipino bosun or the Filipino head housekeeper, who does get the title of head housekeeper, but never the title of chief housekeeper, because then suddenly she may be equal to the chief stewardess, but while she manages all the housekeeping and has all the responsibility there, she doesn't get the title nor the salary to acknowledge her work. On the other hand, we have that. So most of them don't even remember the Filipino last names. And some then say, oh, because they're complicated, but they're not complicated, because most names are Spanish because of the history of the, you know, Spanish Inquisition and what happened to the Philippines there. So it is actually a matter of bias and racism that is so ingrained that people don't notice that they're doing it. They don't notice it. And when you address it, they feel like you've called them a racist, as if they put on a hoodie, like a white hood, and run for they jump to that extreme.
I think you just pointed out some super valuable things for our people to know, because first of all, when I break it down, it's like a total lack of safety that is present. If you're not even able to answer a question candidly, then there's no safety. And if you're also not aware of what's happening to you, then it also points out that you're in some state of survival mode to be, because it's just plain survival mode that you're staying this freeze mode, or smile and be safe, stay out of trouble, keep your job,
And people of ethnicity, they even start to believe and adapt this kind of thing as well. When you ask them, never anything racist or sexist happened to you? No, never, not once. No, they don't even see it. They become so docile and no threat, really no threat in their whole behavior and mannerism that they've adopted all this thinking. And that is very unhealthy because viscerally you still notice it. And your body keeps the count. There's a book and it's phrase that people have heard before. And it is true because people like Dr. Gabo Maté, who is a really well-known psychiatrist and focuses on trauma, he has proven time and time again in his research with other doctors that if you hold trauma and you don't digest it, you don't face it, you get physically sick. Autoimmune diseases, cancer, really. And you do this over time. It's not just the one time you work on this yacht and then the one time you work on the other yacht and then you had 6 months break, you went back to your family and then you went working again. Guess what? This now suddenly concludes a period of 10 or 20 years. And then you surprisingly learn that you got cancer even though you never smoked.
Yeah, it's a guilt.
And they do this to you and we shouldn't be doing this to each other.
No, yeah, definitely. And I think the book you mentioned is from Bessel van der Kolk, that the body keeps score. And also Gabo Maté is really recommendable to dive into and read his books and everything he has to share. And also on this podcast show, we talked with Anna Walker about the nervous system and the impact that trauma has on your body. And also what you can do the other way around to heal each other and yourself, to regulate your emotions and your nervous system. And I think it's so good to dive a little bit deeper into all these things together, because we really have a chance to make it to improve everything together. And
on the lessons that you've learned, for example, I've learned so much on Headspace about meditation and different Buddhist views, which tie in with the philosophy that we've learned, and I'm half Greek, so we also did a lot of homeschooling on that part, and later in life I'm still rereading the Daily Stoics and all that. It really teaches you good methods, but somehow people tend to use it only in that bubble. So when they, like anyone who has a dog and you go to the dog training in that park, in that enclosure, dogs work perfectly fine. Once you leave that place, they all run wild. Because they've only learned it in that space. They've never applied it in any other space. So it only functions in that corner. Now, this is not what learning is supposed to be. You're supposed to be able to not just read, but understand the words and read between the lines, which means you can be able to adapt a solution elsewhere and develop it into another, in another area. That's the whole point. But I don't see people doing this. They love to do meditation and yoga and go to Bali and all of these things, which have a slightly taste of cultural appropriation and exploitation in it. When you only do this, you only take what's good, but you don't look at the areas that might be more critical and you could pay authentic respect to the culture and not just take. And then they...
Yeah, also.
And then they do it just in the time when they do that yoga class or just in the time when they're with their friends, but they never use those teachings. So-called values that they hold, but they don't practice them. So it's more like aspirational values. Like, I like honesty, but I don't live honestly. It's a little bit like
that. Yeah. It's like a spiritual bypass. So you will use something that you want or that you need, but you want to take the shortcut because you take only the nice stuff, right? You don't take the uncomfortable
truths for you. And then it becomes very egoistic. And then they're still surprised why they feel anxiety, why they're uncomfortable, why they're immediately uncomfortable. I can speak with younger. I've noticed that with younger people and like teenagers, not 25-year-olds who are in different groups or cliques already and have already some sort of society ideology shape. Like those Alpha Beta Kappa groups and in universities, how they are portrayed in the movies. Yeah, but with younger people whose mindset are still they recognize this very quickly and they see the discrepancy or the hypocrisy between the one thing that they say and the one thing that then that people do. And we shouldn't be cherry picking this way, because in the end, you notice that you're cheating yourself because you don't feel very good about it. And they almost seem as if they're on the run. Like it's being hunted by their own bad conscience. I don't know. Because in the end, you notice that you're not honest and you're not honest with yourself. your body keeps the score, you will not feel good about any other thing that you might want to cover as I did something good here. You put something bad there or avoided doing something good there because it may have not been instantly good for you. So if you don't have the instant feeling, people don't necessarily want to do it, which works against you because real fulfillment and real pride and also real self-love and awareness and security comes from when you really give and when you see reality. I know my flaws. I know where I have my shortcomings. I work on them, but I also work on all my strengths. And that's what I want to weigh, and I want to give it to others.
And also recognizing that you can never reach the perfect point, right? You can never, ever reach it. You will always have to grow and learn and get feedback and discover more parts of yourself. So I think what we just talked about was the shortcut, the easy buy.
The mind, how healthy can this be? We know mental people are body. Yeah, it's only fast. It doesn't sustain you. It actually makes you sick. It was fast, but it wasn't. So
yeah, so
feeding yourself with this behavior, really.
Yeah, and that's also shows round up our conversation because I really like to dive a little bit more into these subjects, and I'm looking forward to make more episodes because I think we can touch on so many insightful things together, and also let people, if you're listening to this and you think, oh, please, can you dive a little bit into this and this topic, then please let us know in the comments.
Like something I said, if you want more clarification or if you really, I don't know, felt triggered by something, I'd love to hear it as well. It doesn't give me any joy, but it might help me to maybe rephrase it or it helps you to uncover why it triggers you. Because ultimately, everybody's talking about values, but the difference between aspirational values and actual values, people are not aware, which is the ones you wish for, but the ones you actually execute. And the same is with everybody knows that growth happens outside your comfort zone, and all of them are very aware of it when they go to the gym. They all know they're going to be sweating, it's going to be uncomfortable, they feel good afterwards, and there's growth afterwards. But they only keep it isolated in that bubble of the gym and fitness. They don't apply it anymore, or the majority don't apply it anymore in a working setting. And we need to have discomfort and uncomfortable conversations so we can grow.
Exactly. So thank you so much for talking with me today on this. So thank you so much for being here today with us and talking about this important subject.
Thank you for having me again. I really look forward to talking more, and I'm also curious to see what the listeners picked up on and like to share with us.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm looking forward to talk with you again on the next episode. Thank you so much to our listeners. You have been listening to Maritime Unity with Eva and Margarita on Yachting International Radio. So please tune in next time.